You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Oh wow, it's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
So first up, let's talk about health ratings and orange juice.
Okay, so this is one of those sort of crazy stories that you come across occasionally and you sort of can't believe that they're true, but this is in fact true, and I can say that orange juice is now officially less healthy than Diet Cola, which itself sounds absolutely crazy. But hear me out. So this was a result of the Australian New Zealand Ministerial Forum on Food Regulation. And so they have done a review recently. And obviously it's important that we have some idea of whether the food that we eat, the drinks that we drink are good for us or not. And so New Zealand and Australia have set up this thing called the Health Star Ratings System. And this ranges from half a star to 5 stars. I do like the half star thing being the lowest, you know, saying that the absolute worst food for you has some intrinsic goodness. So their latest review, what they have decided to do is to focus more on the sugar content of foods and drinks. And so the higher the sugar content, the worse that these foods are for you. So the way that the system works, number one, it's entirely voluntary. So food manufacturers, etc., are not required to put these stars on their products. And also the system is what is called compensatory. So if you've got something with high sugar, for example, if you go and add some fiber to it, then that can increase the number of stars that you get. And in fact, it also has got another drawback. You may recall, about a couple of years ago now, that good old chocolatey drink Milo got into the news because it got 4.5 stars on its Health Star rating. And the reason that it got that is because you always make Milo up with milk. And in fact, if you make it up with skim milk, then it's even better for you. And so that's something that sort of chocolatey and sugary managed to get 4.5 stars. So there's obviously problems with this particular system. And quite literally, you can't compare apples with oranges. Everything is relative with respect to other similar foods. So for example, if you get a cereal that's got a 4-star rating, then you can't really compare that with, say, the 4-star rating that milk would get. So you have to sort of compare like with like. And so that's where the problem comes with the whole juice thing. So the orange juice in particular. So if you've got a piece of orange, the real fruit, then that's going to get you a 5-star rating because that's good for you. It's good and healthy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you then go and make juice from that fruit, then what happens is that you are concentrating the amount of sugars in that juice. And also you are usually, if you like your orange juice pulp-free, you're removing things like fiber, vitamins are lost in storage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so therefore, what they're doing is comparing with this Health Star rating the juice to the fruit. So where the fruit would get a 5-star rating, the juice could now, thanks to this new review, get a rating as low as 2 stars. And I think, that's a bit dangerous doing that, because I think the general public need to know the exact way that these stars are done. And, I was the other day eating a packet of chips and I happened to look at that and it was 2.5 stars. And I thought, how in the hell can a packet of chips have a 2.5-star health rating, which would put it even higher now than possibly orange juice, which, as I say, could be as low as 2 stars. And the reason for all this, again, being the fact that you've got a higher sugar content or a relatively higher sugar content when you make fruit juice. And as we know, sugar is not necessarily the best thing for you. It can get converted to fat. It can get converted to lactic acid, which is not good for your teeth. It can increase the insulin levels in your blood, which then can raise blood pressure and lead to heart disease, etc., etc., etc. But having said all of that, I do like my orange juice. Apparently, the recommended dose, if you will, for orange juice a day is now 125 mils. I do have more than that every morning, and I can't see myself changing that soon. It's better than Diet Cola, for goodness sake.
So then there's the story on fluorovium, which is an element that I've never heard of. So what is fluorovium?
Well, it's probably no wonder that you've never heard of fluorovium, because it was only first made in 1998. As people hopefully know, there are 118 elements on the periodic table. Most of them are naturally occurring. And there are a growing number that are, please excuse the phrase, man-made. And so basically all of the elements on the periodic table past lead have got no stable isotopes, okay? So what that means in practice is that they are all radioactive. And if they're radioactive, they will eventually decay away to nothing. So for example, all the uranium on the planet will eventually decay away to nothing. And that will take an awfully long time, because the predominant isotope of uranium has got a half-life of 4.5 billion years. So that means after 4.5 billion years, or what, half of the uranium on the planet will have disappeared. And in another 4.5 billion years, another half of that remainder will have disappeared, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when we get up to uranium, that's essentially the last of the really stable radioactive elements, okay? And everything past uranium is a so-called artificial man-made element, okay? And what we have found over the years since the synthesis of these first artificial elements, which is way back in the 1940s, is that as we go on and on and on, the stability of these gets less and less and less. And so the very, very latest elements, sort of any elements with an atomic number over 100 or so, their half-lives are generally very, very short. And the most recent ones, we're talking seconds or parts of a second for their half-lives, which means they're not very stable at all. However, there is a theory out there that says that there should be a so-called island of stability, whereby these new super heavy elements, as we call them, should become stable. And this all depends on the numbers of protons and neutrons in the nucleus of your element or of your atom, okay? So every atom is sort of made up of two parts. It's made up of a positively charged nucleus and the negatively charged electrons. And in the nucleus, we've got protons and we've got neutrons. And what we find is that when we get particular numbers of protons and or neutrons in our nucleus, we tend to get unusual stability. And these numbers of protons and neutrons are the so-called magic numbers. And what we've found is that these magic numbers at the moment are 2, 8, 20, 28, 50, 82, and 126. And so what we generally find is that nuclei that contain that number of protons and or neutrons do exhibit unusual stability. Now, so what people are looking for are instances of these super heavy elements, these artificial elements, where they contain magic numbers of protons and or neutrons and should therefore exhibit remarkable stability. Now, this fluorovium, this element 114, was thought to be one of these super heavy elements that does exhibit unusual stability. Now, when it was first made, they made an atom, yes, one atom of it in 1998, which lasted for more than 30 seconds, which in terms of these super heavy elements is an absolute lifetime. So it's remarkably stable. However, that's never been able to be repeated. Now, these experiments to make these super heavy elements are not trivial at all. Very, very far from it. They require literally zillions of dollars, big expensive laboratories, et cetera, et cetera. And so people recently in Germany have gone back to have a look at fluorovium. And what they managed to do was they made two atoms of one isotope of fluorovium and 11 atoms of another isotope of fluorovium. And the big finding was that, no, they were all gone sort of within parts of a second. So they did not exhibit this hoped for stability, this region or this island of stability. And so therefore the search will continue for these still heavier elements that will supposedly exhibit unusual stability. So might not be the sort of thing that will make it to the front page of your sort of local newspaper. That's pretty interesting for certainly the physical science community.
Yeah, I can't say that I really understood what you were talking about, but
well that's do, not good.
It's a lot to take in, but it is very interesting, this whole journey to discovering an element that can last more than 30 seconds. I don't know at what point, once they reach 30 seconds again, what do they do with it?
Well, I think it's essentially sort of proving a point. It's, you know, there's got to be some sort of theory that explains all of this. And the theory at the moment is this so-called magic number thing. So, the theory for the magic numbers might break down when you're talking about very, very, very heavy elements, which these are now. And so if that is in fact the case, if the theory does break down, then you need a better theory. And so therefore that, you know, if they don't find these supposedly stable elements, then they're going to have to come up with some alternative theory that explains all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's just the natural progression of science, I guess, in this case.
Cool. So lastly, there's this research pointing towards ways to reduce hunting among domestic cats.
Indeed there is. And as a cat owner myself, I think this is pretty cool. So there's been some work at the University of Exeter in the UK, and what they have found is that if you play with your cat for sort of 5 or 10 minutes a day, and also if you feed them meaty food, then the combination of these two things appears to reduce the cat's hunting of wildlife. So that means fewer birds, fewer rats, et cetera, brought to your doorstep, or even worse, inside your house. So what these workers did was that they undertook a 12-week trial of 355 cats. So, you know, it's a fairly decent number there. And they definitely found that 5 to 10 minutes of play a day reduced the number of prey that animals would bring in by 25%. And also that if they fed the animals good meaty food, not sort of the dry food and stuff like that, then that also reduced the number of prey animals that they brought in by 36%. You know, that's a third, which is a significant amount. So, you know, I think that's quite an important result. I seem to remember a certain political party advocating.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up.
Cats should be got rid of, I believe. But obviously cat lovers would certainly not do that. They also did some study of, bright coloured collars, actually a thing called Bird Be Safe. And what that does is to make cats very visible to birds in particular. And they found that use of these bright coloured collars actually lowered the number of birds that were brought in by 42%, which is extraordinarily significant. But interestingly, it made no difference to the numbers of rats and stoats and bunnies and, you know, things like that that were brought in. So this was specific to birds. And possibly the most surprising result from all of this is that cat bells overall didn't work at all. And their theory on this is that cats are cunning animals. I'm sure any cat owner would agree with that. And what they believe is that cats actually figure out a way to hunt with those bells on. So, you know, they move more slowly or something like that to actually stop the bells ringing, which I think is kind of cool. And again, the hypothesis here about the meat, the meaty foods, seemingly, you know, meat's full of protein and stuff like that. So obviously you can get protein from non-meat sources like soy and stuff like that, but they seem to have found that foods that are made or contain protein, soy-derived protein or vegetable-derived protein or whatever, were not as good at all as good straight sort of protein derived from meat. So there'll be some studies going on there to have a look at the differences, I guess, between the meat and non-meat derived proteins and why that does make a difference to the cats. So I guess the take-home message from this, love your cats, you know, play with them and feed them good food, and they won't go harming the outdoor wildlife so much.
Yeah, as you said, there is this sort of concern that domestic cats can pose a risk to endemic life. Can you ever imagine a future in which, in order to protect those species, there's like a government-mandated playtime for cat owners where they have to entertain their cats so they don't go out hunting?
You said that with a straight face, Felix.
This is interesting research, but I can definitely imagine a select few cat owners hearing this research and thinking, oh yes, I'm going to start doing this. But once again, there are a hell of a lot more cat owners than there are considerate people. So I'm wondering how broadly this will reach those people.
Well, you know, and so all the cat owners who are listening to this, I mean, you know, get out there and give this a try. Certainly reading reports of the studies and the people who were involved, they were just absolutely astonished at the difference in their cats' behaviours. So, you know, heck, why not? You know, I think, you know, cat owners are animal lovers themselves, obviously, and so therefore, you know, the last thing they want is some birds and all those sorts of things dying as a result of their pets. So, you know, why not give it a try? I think I'm certainly going to with our three cats. So, yeah, why not?
Cool. Well, that brings us to the end of Dear Science. Thank you so much for joining me, Alan.
I know a pleasure as always.
Strange circumstances, but thank you so much for pulling through.
And hopefully in 2 weeks' time we'll be in the studio.
That was Felix and Alan for Dear Science.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.